at 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Dallas County Sheriff Lupe Valdez will resign to run for governor. That's according to media reports and to one of the men hoping to replace her. Valdez would be the first high-profile Democrat to challenge Republican incumbent Greg Abbott. She's a singular political figure, born to migrant farm workers and raised in San Antonio. She's an Army veteran who's been in law enforcement for 42 years. Valdez was reelected to her fourth term as sheriff last fall. In a StoryCorps interview in 2014, she reflected on her groundbreaking political debut.
Nobody had ever heard of me. There had never been a minority run for sheriff. There had never been a female run for sheriff. And all of a sudden, I come up, a minority Hispanic lesbian. It all started because somebody talked to me and said, why don't you consider running for sheriff? We've looked at some of the stuff you've done, and we honestly believe that you would be a good candidate. And I looked at him and I said, you know I'm lesbian, don't you? And they said, yeah, that's your one fault, but I think we can get past that.
The Dallas Morning News reports that three men have emerged as candidates to succeed Valdez. One of them, lawyer Peter Schulte, confirmed by tweet that he's planning to run. In other political news, several Texans in Congress are calling it quits, six in all. And North Texas Congressman Joe Barton is under pressure from members of his party to step away after reports that he sent sexually explicit texts to female constituents. Joshua Blank is the manager of polling and research at the Texas Politics Project at the University of Texas. He talked about the congressional picture with David Brown, host of the Texas Standard.
There's so much going on politically is that people want to read into this. Basically, I think in a lot of cases, whatever suits their political disposition.
So, sure.
If you're a Democrat, you say, well, Republicans are running away from office, you know, and you're focusing on the Republican retirements. If you're a Republican, you know, there's actually plenty of very legitimate reasons why we've seen so much turnover in the, let's see, from Republican members in the congressional delegation. In a lot of cases, a lot of them have either served for a long time or, you know, even in a really practical sense, there are term limits on committee chairmanships that the Republicans place on their members. And so at least in a couple of these cases, these members are coming to the expiration of their chairmanships of the powerful committees that they want to be chairs of. And so they're choosing instead of sort of going to the back of the line or going on to a less interesting committee to them just to walk away.
So do you see waves, like patterns, where it's you have a whole lot of churn and then everything's pretty calm and then a whole lot of churn sort of like that?
We know historically the president's party in the midterm election after they're elected tend to lose a lot of seats. And that also tends to reflect basically their job approval. And so speaking back to, you know, sort of Democrats giddy about this, what looks like a high level of churn, a lot of that could be Republicans looking at the 2018 midterms and saying, you know, this is going to be difficult. And so I think that's something that you'll see in Texas. Whereas, you know, when a Democrat is holding the White House, you're not probably going to see as much churn in a midterm election because there are just less Democrats. But in this case, you know, I think even though what I said before is true, there's a lot of reason for the retirements that we've seen. This is a pretty unusually high number at this point, because right now we're only talking about voluntary retirements, right? Whereas when we look at the overall churn, we also include sort of, you know, what would be involuntary retirements, which is something, you know, is they don't even fail to basically refile for office. They step down or they pass away. But also, people can lose in the primary. They can lose in the general election. And right now, going back over the last 20 years, the only time we've had more churn that we know that we're already going to have was back in the 108th Congress, in which we had seven members leave the delegation.
And how long ago was that, 108th Congress?
108th Congress was back in 03-04.
Okay.
But part of the reason I asked the question is, you know, I think when we started this out and everybody was trying to read everything into these retirements was to say, well, you know, Texas has a big congressional delegation. It's the second biggest congressional delegation in the country with 36 members. Is six a lot? And what we're kind of finding is, you know, it kind of is. And so it definitely is interesting. But, you know, it is also the sort of thing where there's so many possible explanations right now. It's tough to really say what's driving this.
Right. If you look at the number of Republicans versus Democrats who've announced that they're going to leave, does that give you any clues about what we're seeing?
So far, four Republicans have announced they're going to leave and two Democrats. So the two Democrats are Gene Green from Houston and Beto O'Rourke. But Beto O'Rourke had already sort of term limited himself and he's running for Senate. You know, as far as the Republican members go, you know, Sam Johnson is older and was basically deciding to retire, had been there for a long time. Lamar Smith was one of the longest serving members of the delegation and again was being term limited out of his committee chairmanship. You know, I think it's really easy to look at this and say, oh, you know, Republicans are running because of sort of the political environment. And I don't think that's entirely untrue, right? I mean, I can't imagine that any member of Congress feels like it's fun to be in Congress right now.
Mm-hmm. That's pollster Joshua Blank of UT Austin talking with David Brown of the Texas Standard. Tom Clancy, author of blockbusters like The Hunt for Red October, died in 2013. Yet thrillers keep coming under his name. The latest is called Power and Empire, and it's written by Fort Worth native Mark Cameron. He sat down with KERA's Ann Bothwell.
Mark Cameron, welcome to KERA.
Hey, thanks. It's great to be here.
You are already a best-selling author. How do you go about approaching writing in someone else's name, especially someone as legendary as Tom Clancy?
There's just absolutely no way that you can imitate Tom Clancy. He's an inimitable force, and so we don't even try. I hope that it's the same style of book, but it's really a Mark Cameron novel in the spirit of Tom Clancy, with those iconic characters, Jack Ryan Jr., John Clark. And I try to stay true to them.
Were you familiar with the books?
Oh, absolutely. I remember when I first read Hunt for Red October, I was a rookie policeman and just sort of trying to navigate my way through a new job. And that was a good escape and a new kind of fiction that we really attribute to Tom Clancy. So I've been a Tom Clancy fan since he started writing.
Now, you're not the first writer to work under Tom Clancy's name. Does someone keep track of all the storylines? How does it work?
It's kind of a small group, but certainly very knowledgeable. And we all talk to one another to make sure that something as simple as what Jack Ryan Jr.'s favorite soccer team, Mark Graney, Mark and I had a long discussion about that, because we know as readers that we have a certain character type and the look, and we don't want to mess that up for readers. So we want to get that right for sure.
Part of the new book, Power and Empire, is set here in Texas, and you're from Fort Worth. You started your law enforcement career here. How much of the novel is inspired by your experiences?
I was talking to a friend of mine from the Marshal Service, and we developed a mutual friendship with the, he introduced me to a lieutenant at the time, but now he's a captain with the Texas Department of Public Safety. And they were just telling me about a program, the Intervention for Protection of Children, or IPC, plays a big part in this book because it was so fascinating. And that really blossomed out of a Texas DPS program to stop and combat human trafficking.
You had a long career in law enforcement. You are also an avid adventure motorcyclist. You're a sailor and a camper. You teach fugitive tracking, and you have a black belt in jiu-jitsu. You sound more like a character from one of your novels than an actual novelist. Were you writing the whole time you were in law enforcement?
Yeah, I actually was. I told my wife that I wanted to be a novelist and a police officer. We were in law enforcement before we even got married. And that first year, she bought me a bulletproof vest and a Smith Corona typewriter. And she wanted to help my dreams to be a writer.
What makes a great hero for thrillers?
Good heroes, they don't decide to be heroes. They just are. You know, we have Medal of Honor winners that jumped on top of grenades and saved their buddies for no thought about their own safety, or even more figuratively, people that risk, like Jack Ryan does multiple times. He risks his good name. He just doesn't even think about that. He just does what's right. I think there's a certain innate quality of selflessness in a hero that allows them to press forward when little bits and pieces of their body and soul are being whittled away.
Mark Cameron, thank you so much for taking the time.
Hey, this has been great. Thank you.
Mark Cameron will sign copies of Power and Empire tomorrow at Half Price Books in Fort Worth. There are details online at artandseek.org. Mostly clear skies in store for us this evening. Should be a low around 45 later on. It's 6:30.